Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, it's Wimbledon, folks, or it certainly will be Wimbledon in about 14 hours' time from now. This is your Wimbledon preview tennis podcast recorded for the first time as a team from
14 hours.
Hashtag TP Towers.
Quit, let's go to sleep. Then it'll be over. Then we can start.
You're not supposed to wish your life away, David.
I
remember my old headmistress doing an assembly about that.
Oh.
Doesn't matter how excited you are about something, you should never wish your life away.
Okay, I'll try not to.
It's your favourite part, I thought, David.
Yeah, this is the good bit.
Yeah.
It's all to look forward to.
All right.
Yes, we're on the cusp of the first Wimbledon Championships for 2 years. What we have been hyping left, right and centre as one of the most exciting and significant Grand Slam tournaments in our memory, certainly in mine and Matt's memory, in your memory too, David?
Yeah, definitely. And actually, when you just said that, that really hit me. The thought that we haven't had this for 2 years. I don't know why. I mean, why this particular event? Because the pandemic has we know what it's cost everybody's in their worlds and sport and so forth. But there's something about the fact that it is two complete years since we were here, that feels bigger than just losing a Wimbledon. You know, it feels like two or three Wimbledons. And, walking around the grounds today, yeah, it felt quite eerie, but really, really special.
Mm. Yeah, I've been trying to put my finger on why exactly I'm so excited for this tournament. I'm always excited for Grand Slams, but I am feeling a particular sense of excitement for this one. And I think it's the fact that we haven't had it for 2 years at Wimbledon.
Yeah.
It's the fact that there are so many storylines. And frankly, it's the fact that we can do this. You know, we can record a podcast together in person. We've had four slams remote recording, haven't we? And, you know, I think part of the fun of watching sport is the communal experience of watching it. I think that's why fans not being present in stadiums has been such a blow. But I just think, you know, just for us, I don't want to be, you know, focus on us too much, but I've watched Grand Slams in my bedroom on my own for the last 15 months. It's just exciting to be able to share it with other people again. And I hope that other people get the same experience now the world is starting to open up a little bit more.
My sense is that this is a familiar story. Everybody's experiencing this. I bumped into a few people today and there's an excitement level that, I don't know, I don't remember it being like this. Everybody looks forward to Wimbledon. Everybody's pleased it's here. But there's just been an inevitability about it being here every year. And if you're one of the lucky ones to be able to come to it, or in our case, to work at it, people have just only known that. And suddenly they haven't been able
by,
to know
by
that.
Bumped into people, do you mean accosted by fans?
Well, I mean, I did meet Pam Shriver walking along Somerset Road today, or, you know, I was just stood there minding my own business, and I was the lucky one she picked out of the the vast galleries.
What gave
of...
you away?
Yes, this will be the first slam since Australia of last year, the Australian Open at the start of 2020, that we've all been able to record daily podcasts together. There was no puppy there that time, though, was there?
She's been very well behaved. It's the first time I've ever met Billie Jean, and we're best buds already.
Mm. She's on a PR campaign.
I'm having a good influence, I think.
Yeah, yes. It's all you, David. So, Wimbledon is around the corner. David's going to be there for BBC Radio every day. Matt and I have tickets for tomorrow, for the first day, with the general public.
It's going to be amazing. Mm. You've got court one, haven't you?
We've got court one. And thank goodness, because it's going to rain all day. yeah, but the most of the time we'll be watching from here, and then welcoming David over in the evening to regale us with tales of being on site, of which I'm sure there are many. So one way or another, we've got you covered. We've also got a feature of which the working title is Dialer Dan.
That's yes. The first I've heard
yeah,
of this
Yeah, we came
title.
Up with that while you were in the loo, Matt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, other ideas.
I'll go to the loo more often. Other seems ideas to lead to the best ideas.
That were tabled were Dear Dan's Diary. Mm. Mm. What was your one?
Eva's voice notes.
Right, rubbish.
Didn't really roll off the tongue.
So, if everyone's in agreement, Dialer Dan
yeah.
is a thing. David, what's Dialer Dan?
Whenever we've got a question that we want to ask Dan Evans, we just ask him and he appears.
And we just ask him, David texts him.
Just sort of like magic.
Matt and I just eagerly await the response. Yeah.
Just anything.
So we'll bring you the first instalment of Dialer Dan shortly.
Yeah.
With Dan Evans answering David's question about how he really feels about his draw.
Yeah, about whether he looks ahead in the draw.
And how he feels about having Feliciano Lopez in the opening round. Yeah. How was the draw, Matt? You're a very discerning critic of draw ceremonies. Marks out of 10 for Wimbledon on Friday.
It was good. It was a good draw. They did it properly. Name pronunciations perhaps could have been... a little better.
Christian Ruud is delighted to have a wild card. He didn't yeah. find out until Friday, but he's on the plane.
Yeah.
He's ready to go.
I sympathise somewhat with Jerry Armstrong, who I've attended tennis tournaments at with Christian Ruud in the draw. It's just that it's his son Casper. But, you know, we all get that one wrong.
But I loved the format of the draw. Picking names out of the hat, that's the way it should be.
Yes. Don't over-engineer draws.
No.
That is, if you take one thing from this podcast, other than Dialer Dan, let it be that.
Yeah. No, they do a good job of the draw here. Because they just, yeah, they keep it classic. It's like the old FA Cup draw back in the day. Probably too early for you two to even remember. That was done just on the radio, and you just heard the balls as they're going around, and then they're picked out, and there was the chairman of the FA was announcing them, and yeah, that's what was going on here.
And I must say, the outcome of the draw, I think there were some excellent first round matches. Often my attention in the first week of a slam is actually away from the show courts, but I actually think the order of plays on centre court and number one court will be really strong over the next few days. I mean, they certainly are on Monday, because quite a lot of big names have got really interesting draws.
Who is going to get the graveyard shift on Tuesday when England are playing Germany?
Well,
other than David Law in the commentary booth.
that's a 5 p.m. match, actually, England-Germany, isn't it?
So
there will be a clash.
Yeah, third match of the day on any court.
It reminds me of a couple of massive World Cup moments that I've been at Wimbledon for. I remember England playing in the 2006 World Cup when I was on court one in the lowdown.
Another one where we lost to Germany.
One
where we lost to Germany.
And there was these massive matches on, and people were just expecting people to just leave the moment the match came on, and they didn't. I was pleased, and I shouldn't be surprised really. They paid for a ticket, they want to see the matches, but you could see lots of people with earphones in just going, "Oh no!" You know, when these penalties were getting missed, and then of course I was on court one whilst in the 2018 World Cup, England against Croatia, and I was watching.
And there was a great match happening on centre court.
One Martin
Del Potro.
Everyone
on centre was
against Rafael
bummed to be missing the football, but at least they were watching one of the greatest matches.
Yeah, whilst I'd got Miloš Raonic against, I kind of, fellow
Isner?
Big server. Yeah, someone like that. And it was...
It was Isner, wasn't it?
Wasn't one of my career highlights. but anyway, at least I got to go to Wimbledon.
Yeah, so that'll be Tuesday, yeah. when we know we'll have... Look, I mean, centre's going to be Roger Federer, isn't it?
Yes.
Has he got a good draw?
Adrian Mannarino, first round, isn't it?
I think that's not ideal.
I think
ideal.
That's tough. Mm. I think
it's all right.
I think peak Roger Federer, that's fine.
I think he'll like the trajectory of that ball.
Censor it if you like, but please could you repeat your description of Adrian Mannarino that you gave us on the WhatsApp chat?
I can't remember it.
It wasn't complimentary.
Was it not? Oh, yes, I think what I was trying to get at was if you got on top of him early on, you're not going to get a lot of fight, is what I was trying to get at.
But I also, he's not somebody that will be crippled by respect. I don't think he gives two hoots who's down the other end of the court
and
what the occasion is.
Has he ever caused a big upset?
That's a funny one, because really. I sort of think of him as somebody that would, and yet,
no.
You're right, no, he doesn't.
No. I think of
nearly
him as...
against Zverev at the US Open, but... didn't.
He likes quieter occasions. I think his ball will suit Federer down to the ground. I haven't looked at the head-to-head. Wish I had.
I do remember them playing in Basel and Mannarino pushed him. I think he had...
Oh, great.
I think he had a break point deep in the third set to go up a break. I think Federer saved it with, you know, sort of classic half volley off his toes.
This is not a normal level of memory, remembering the specific rally played on break point in a sort of second round match in Basel 5 years ago.
I'm just so used to this that this is normal to me now from that.
Mannarino Federer head to head.
I mean, I think there is a chance that now I think about it, that Mannarino could sort of handcuff him on the baseline with those flat drives.
It's 6-0 to Federer.
Yeah, I thought so.
one in Basel?
They played it. There was one in Basel 2013, Matt. Oh, also 2017.
That's
though.
The one. That was tight, right?
Oh, he won a set.
Yeah.
Well,
but they last played at Wimbledon in 2018, and Federer won Love 5 and 4.
See, I think that'll suit.
Yeah, okay. but. How relevant is the head-to-head if Federer's not
different
the Federer
Federers.
We've known?
Different Federers is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think he'll still have enough to beat Mannarino. I'm not worried about him going out. But I do think it's a little bit tricky. But maybe he'd like that. He needs matches.
When I'm reading through an order of play on Amazon and I have to find something to say about everyone to sort of bring it to life, always end up with tricky lefty for Adrian Mannarino.
Never fails.
Did we get any intel or inkling from Roger Federer's press conference yesterday as to where he feels he's at, how fit he might be?
Well, I always think fitness-wise, he's a difficult guy to read, but I felt that he was satisfactorily upbeat and really... I mean...
pumped.
Yeah. Ooh. But he actually used the word pumped to me.
Mm.
Which is quite funny. But, you know, I think that encouraged me that he looks really excited by the prospect. I think he's got a good draw looking at this. Mannarino to play Gasquet or Sugita, and then potentially Krajinovic, Bolt, Puy or Norrie. I think he's... I've got him in going deep. I've got him going deep.
Yeah, I do. I think it's but, okay.
So do I, but going deep isn't the point. He's not here to go deep.
Well, you've got to start.
But he needs that.
Yeah,
he needs
but
that.
It, does any, do any of us in this room... I haven't done my predictions yet, so I'll exempt myself. Have him going to the final?
No. I've got him in the semis.
Semis losing to Berrettini.
Yeah.
And if you handed him that now, he wouldn't take it.
No.
He's just not. No. It's not what he's here for.
How much do you think bubble life can be affecting Federer? I've been thinking about this because, you know, we've obviously been joking about how much, you know, how long it's taking him to get used to the new towel rule. You know, and I just think Federer is so ingrained with how things are done for him, by him now. He hasn't got his family here. I think the fact he's got a happy family on tour is one of the main reasons why he's kept playing. And he's not had as long to adjust to it because he wasn't around last year. Could that be affecting his mindset in any way? He was very honest about Haller, where he just had a total disaster in those last two sets. He was cross with his bad attitude. And I don't know, I feel like things not being as they are can perhaps affect him a little bit.
I think that's a really good point. Actually, he was asked about how are you finding the bubble, wasn't he? And he was pretty dismissive of the question, not in a tetchy way, but he was very keen not to be complaining.
He just said...
He said, look, I accept it.
Bubble's the bubble.
I accept it. But accepting it and not complaining about it aren't the same as it not affecting you and it being just fine. And I know that the top players are being given preferential rooms and suites in the tournament hotel, but they are all in the same hotel. This will be the worst hotel Roger Federer has stayed in for 20 years, probably.
Maybe.
I think it's, by mortal standards, a nice hotel. But by Roger Federer standards, he probably hasn't seen a hotel like that for a decade.
The issue is more pronounced here because, as he was saying, normally we go in, we get the house, we go figure out our grocery shopping, and he has the time of his life and he feels at home and he's enjoying London, Wimbledon life out as a civilian and a very rich one at that, who can have whatever he wants whenever he wants. And that's just a totally different vibe at this championship. And I think we struggle a bit to fully relate here. Because, look, we're sitting in your flat right now, Catherine. I've just walked back from Wimbledon up and down Church Road, bumping into Pam Shriver, having a chat, you know, and they can't do any of that. They are in the car, and I walked up, and there was a huge bus to take all the players that were together in a group and all their support teams back to the hotel, and I was told to walk around this coach and stay out of the way, basically, because that's bubble life right there. Pick them up, drop them off, pick them up again from the hotel tomorrow for their match, bring them, and then they've got to go back again. There's no hanging around, there's no socializing. It's not the worst thing in the world, but it's not easy, and I don't think I'm staying in a house as well. I'm doing all the things that they want to be doing, and I'm not even playing the event.
How do we think it might affect Djokovic, who also has a...
I don't think anything will affect Novak Djokovic right now.
He's got a great draw.
He's got a good draw. I don't think it even matters what his draw is. I think he is so in the zone, so focused, so ready. I don't know what can derail him.
Tell me both how and why you're convinced that this Wimbledon will be different to 2016 when he so struggled after winning the French.
Well, I think the one thing that might derail him on this quest for, let's be honest, the golden calendar slam is stress. And because we have seen him stressed in the past, I'm not sure that's going to come here. I think there are more legs to come. I think he's in such a good place. I think the reason it will be different from Wimbledon 5 years ago, which is the only time he's ever come into Wimbledon having won the French Open, is that for me, like, felt like a loss of motivation.
Like, yeah.
What's next after winning the French Open? That was his career goal. He accomplished it, and suddenly he's back in a Grand Slam. How do you get up for that? And I think he struggled with it, and it persevered, didn't it, for a couple of years. Now, the next goal is so clear in his mind. I think the little doubles he played in Mallorca was kind of a perfect little bridge, actually. Get on the grass, have some fun, and now he's here, sort of business mode. I agree. I think I can't see him being derailed here. I think the only way he's going to lose, in my opinion, is if he is, if it does affect him. I can't see anyone being better than him.
Has anyone in our predictions competition, and not all entries are in yet, including mine, has anyone not picked Djokovic for the men's title?
When I put mine in, there'd been about 13 entries, and I think they'd all got Djokovic.
I've not seen any yet.
He starts against Jack Draper, first up tomorrow on centre court.
I think Draper can make that fun.
Yeah.
And lose.
Agree. Yeah, I would agree. Kevin Anderson could be second. Davidovich Fokina would be interesting, third round, if that happened. I don't know what Davidovich Fokina's like on grass. I have no clue.
Well, he's a junior champion.
Oh, right.
Here, but...
Of course he is, yes.
But I just,
you told me that the other week.
I can't imagine him getting close to Djokovic yet. No. I think it's a great draw for Djokovic.
I think so,
looking through this draw, I mean, I think I ended up with Jannik Sinner as his quarterfinal opponent. And we saw Sinner lose the first match of the entire Queen's tournament the other week to Draper. You know, he's just, he's so...
Yeah, that's not form,
he's
is
so
it?
Green on it. That's the thing. Mm. He's just so unused to it.
I think he said he'd spent 15 days on grass in his life before Queen's.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tournament.
Yeah. What is Daniil Medvedev's draw like, David? He has just won the title in Mallorca. He always used to say that grass was his favourite surface.
He has a tough first round.
Oh, Jan-Lennard Struff in the first round. And that was the last thing to come out of the draw, wasn't it?
Yes,
that,
it was.
That tie and a sort of, went around.
And I think, didn't Struff just... I think he just beat Medvedev in Halle.
Oh, that is not a good draw then.
But then
it?
Medvedev won the title the week after.
Yeah, I think over five sets, Medvedev will probably.
So, assuming he gets through that, what,
could,
what
end
do
up
we
with
think?
Alcaraz second round, Cilic third round, Dimitrov Hurkacz in the fourth round, and then quarterfinal opponent most likely going to be Federer.
Okay.
I would love to see that.
That would be fun.
I feel like we haven't seen Federer Medvedev since Medvedev's become a real force at the top.
I think Medvedev can cause Federer problems for similar reasons to why Djokovic does.
I think I'm going to end up predicting that to happen.
Mm. Yeah, I think so too.
I've got Berrettini, though, bludgeoning his way through all the way into the final.
What's his draw like?
He has got Pella first round. Then he's got
Van
der Schlupp or...
Botic van der Zandschlupp.
Yeah, that's the one. Van der Zandschlupp.
One to watch, says Patrick Mouratoglou.
Van der Zandschlupp. Right, yeah. Barrère, Moutet, Bedene, these are all in the section.
This is a good draw.
John Isner could be his third round opponent for Berrettini, which, you know, might be tricky for him. Casper Ruud, Aslan Karatsev, fourth round, most likely. And then in his quarter, it's supposed to be Zverev.
I've got
Ogier Aliassime, though, actually, against him in the quarters.
Is there anyone else in the men's draw that is worth highlighting, either a seed that has a bad draw and is liable to lose, or a floater that catches your eye? I mean, Tsitsipas. We haven't talked about Tsitsipas.
Well, we were
unknown quantity.
We were talking
Francis Tiafoe.
Yeah, we were wondering whether that should be one of our predictions in our newsletter for tonight's stroke tomorrow morning, where we pick an upset in the first, you know, four rounds of the tournament. Is that an upset? Is that realistic as a possibility? I think we all considered it, and we all, well, certainly I ended up thinking, well, no, I think Tsitsipas will win.
Yeah, same. I think if he is going to be vulnerable, Tsitsipas, it likely is going to be in the first couple of rounds. He's not had any matches on grass for 2 years, and as you said, Tiafoe is a tough opponent. I thought he played quite well at Queen's. But I just have faith in Tsitsipas. He's having such a good year. He doesn't have that many bad results anymore, so I have to back him. I just think the hard thing about the men's draw, the women's draw, the whole tournament, missing a year of a specialist surface like grass makes it so hard to know how well these players who have really blossomed since the last Wimbledon are going to do on grass. You know, that's Karatsev,
particularly
Rude,
the case in
Tsitsipas,
the women's draw, I think.
And then
where
the women's
draw
even more.
Grand Slam champions who I genuinely don't know how they play on grass, really. Okay, I've watched a couple of matches in Eastbourne, but
Andreescu and Świątek, yeah, particularly, because we rave about them so much. And yet, I was looking, when we were doing the picks today, I'm looking at Andreescu's section and I'm thinking, when did I last not have Andreescu in a quarterfinal of a Grand Slam if she's in the draw? I can't think of one. And yet, in the end, I went with somebody I think is just probably more suited to the surface. But her and Świątek, I feel, in years to come, will probably be able to win this thing. But at the moment, I can't imagine they're going to... Because it's. I feel like I've appreciated the intricacies of the surface a bit more in the last few weeks because it's been such a long time since we've seen it. You see how uncomfortable certain players are moving on it and what they do with a ball.
And I think with Andreescu, since Miami, she's not actually been able to show up at a tournament without any form and go deep in it. I mean, that was one of her trademarks, but more recently she lost first round at Roland Garros. She took a loss on the grass, didn't she? It feels harder to justify picking Andreescu without any form than it did even a few months ago.
I think it's about confidence in her body as much as it is, or more so than it is form. I think she's nervous about her body, and it will take a lot of matches. I think it will take a bit of a grind for her to let go of that stress. And why wouldn't she be nervous about her body? It's repeatedly letting her and us down.
That section she's in is just rammed with people of note. Azarenka is a potential fourth round opponent. Annette Kontaveit could be Azarenka Kontaveit in the third round. There is Kasatkina. There's Ostapenko, who's just won a title.
Wow.
She's happening.
And when she happens, she wins Grand Slams.
But would you back her?
No.
To back it up? That's the thing. I ended up going with the player that she beat in... Was it Eastbourne?
Yeah, gone for Kontaveit.
No, I've gone for Kasatkina.
Oh, right.
To be in
another
the quarters.
Player she beat.
I'm always totally won over.
You are a Kasatkina flag waver.
Well, I am. But I'm also... I can't get out of my head watching what Kasatkina did to Ash Barty on grass at Wimbledon about 3 years ago. Seeing somebody beat Barty at her own game was something I don't think I'd seen before.
Is that not also a problem with players winning a title the week before a slam? I always struggle with that when I'm making a prediction, because logically you should think that's the player I'm going to pick. Yeah. They're in great form. But actually it can often go the other way. And you sometimes think, well, they've had matches in different conditions. They've maybe peaked too soon. How do you back it up?
Alex de Minaur won in Eastbourne yesterday. That was the men's final was played second. It was on late afternoon. He's, I think, playing a not before 5 p.m. match on day one.
Yeah.
Tomorrow in the opening round, the last time he won a tournament on the eve of a slam was Sydney. Before, was it the 2020 Australian Open or 2019? And he ended up having to withdraw.
Yeah, he hurt himself, didn't he?
It's a poison chalice.
My mind goes back to Djokovic doing it recently in Belgrade, and when we were concerned that wasn't the standard preparation for a Grand Slam, and he ended up winning the French Open as well.
Yeah, that's true.
But I do agree with you at this tournament. With the amount of tennis they've all played, the French Open and everything else, to come to Wimbledon, some of these players, it feels all a bit frantic. Mm. So, especially the ones who've had to fly in. You know, it's a lot all at once, and yet you see the other players are spending a good 5-6 days just acclimatizing, getting used to it, enjoying. Oh, hello, Billie Jean. Getting used to the It's all right. It's all right. I'm not having a go at your favourite player. It's who's your favourite player?
Billie Jean King.
She's not in the draw, Billie Jean. Yeah. And I see these players, particularly today, because it was so quiet at Wimbledon. I think that that's good for you to just get your bearings and to have to come straight in and with the testing and with the new bubble and all that sort of thing. I'm not convinced, really, that they'll be in. I think that it does make some players vulnerable in that first round match. I think if you get past your first one, that match toughness can really come into it then. Be very interesting.
Yeah, completely agree. Yeah. So no one's got Andreescu doing a thing.
No, I haven't got her in the quarters. I do love, by the way, that Ash Barty's opening the women's tournament.
Yeah, because I love it too, but it has happened as a result of Simona Halep having to withdraw from the tournament. She went to Wimbledon. She was posting all sorts of really uplifting posts. I'm here. I'm finally going to have the chance to defend my title. And she has to pull out.
It's such a shame. That is probably one of my favourite Wimbledon traditions, actually. The fact that if you win the tournament, you know exactly when you're going to be playing the next year. I just think that's such a cool thing to look forward to.
None of the others do that, do they?
The others don't do it. And she was denied it last year, obviously, because the tournament didn't happen. And to be denied it again, it's just a massive shame.
You know what we should do? We should have Ash Barty win the title this year and then let Simona Halep next year.
Oh, and she would.
Yeah.
You've really just tugged at my heartstrings there.
And Ash, I tell you, Ash Barty was asked about this in her press conference, and she said exactly what you said. You know, it is a great honour, but Simo has earned that. Mm. She should be doing that.
Yeah, totally. And look, it's fallen very well that it's Ash Barty versus Carlos Suarez Navarro, who got such a rough deal, I thought, at the French Open when she was put on in front of basically no crowd at her last time playing Roland Garros. If this is her last Wimbledon match, it's a great match to have.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was a great Ash Barty press conference yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, she seemed more at ease than I think I've seen her in a press conference before. She's never rude. She's just usually stoic and really flat batting things away and not really engaging. This time she really was engaging. I mean, she told this lovely story about how she'd come up with the outfit that she's going to wear at this Wimbledon, which is the 50th anniversary of Yvonne Goolagong's first title in 1971. And she has had an outfit designed in its honour. And it's very similar and it's really cool. And you could see her face light up because she idolises Yvonne Goolagong. We talked about that in our Tennis Relived edition about Yvonne Goolagong a few months back. Yeah, she just, it appears that the injury is not causing her any concerns now because, of course, she had to pull out of it was the French Open, wasn't it, where she got hurt. And she doesn't seem worried about that anymore. I asked her about what her favourite surface is, given that she's won the French Open, that she's had success on hard courts, and yet she's always talked so fondly about grass. And she just goes, all of them.
Yeah, it was a great line.
Yeah, and that, I think, is one of her biggest strengths, adaptability. She's got a game which translates. She can adapt within a match as well, I think. I really hope she is past that injury. She said the rehab had been quite slow immediately after Paris, and she hasn't played any tournaments.
What was it she had again? Was it a back problem?
It was a hip, wasn't it? And I think she said that she'd never had it before, and it sort of just happened in practice one day.
An acute episode.
Yes, I think those were the exact words. And I think her physio hadn't seen it before. It was quite concerning, I remember thinking at the time. So I hope she's okay. She's not played a warm-up event, which makes me doubt it a little bit. But she's absolutely got the game to win this tournament.
She's in the same half as Serena Williams, who I can see, Matt, because I have your draw sheet in front of me. You have put into your quarterfinals. You haven't gone beyond the quarterfinals on this sheet. Who's got her? I'm assuming, David, you've also got her in the quarters.
Ash, yes.
No, Serena.
Oh, sorry, Serena. Yes, I have. Yeah, I've got Serena going all the way to the final.
Beating Barty in the semis?
Yeah.
The last time Serena played Wimbledon and didn't reach the final was 2014.
Oh, my.
Which...
How many times she played it in that period?
Four. So the last four times she's played Wimbledon, she's reached the final.
Wow.
And so two, the Halep-Kerber losses.
I've got Petra Kvitova beating her in the final, and then somebody told me that Petra Kvitova is coming back from an ankle problem, so... A bit miffed.
It's not bad enough that she didn't reach the final in Bad Hamburg, wherever that is.
Yeah. Beaten by Angelique Kerber?
Yeah, who is in Serena's section.
If only she'd been in Good Hamburg.
That's an absolutely belting third round match, that, isn't it? Angelique Kerber against Serena Williams. That was a final here about 4 years ago.
It's been two finals in the last 5 years, hasn't it? They match up.
Yeah,
brilliantly. Serena Kerber is one of my favourite matches. I'm just so persuaded by Serena's record at Wimbledon. And there have been a couple of tournaments in these last few years where she's not played that well.
Wait a minute.
She's still made it through to the final.
Are you calling 24 here, Matt?
You're calling a woman with an ankle injury to beat her in the final.
Yes,
you know,
I am.
Do you know, I think I've said in the past that I didn't think I would beat predicting Serena to win another slam.
But
I actually think
he's
I am.
Got a little smile on his face.
I think I'm predicting Serena.
David's face.
Yes,
well,
Matt!
You've got her here, assuming these... You've written... It's very light ink on this draw.
Has he been trying to
there's
rub
a,
that out?
There's a real lack of commitment, I would say, in these
names. I must
names.
Say, I was on a
but
wobbly
the names
train.
That you've got are Serena and Mukova.
Feel quite good about that.
Yeah, okay. I had a dream about Mukova being in the final the other day, but it was just a dream. Sorry, Carolina. So you've got Serena beating Barty in the semis?
I think I probably do, yes. Mm. Yeah.
I'm just talking you through your predictions here,
You're
Matt.
Making them for me.
You're welcome. Are there
the
any
end.
Other... I'm just going to throw some names out there and you can tell me whether you think they're going to do a thing,
okay.
Lose early, win it. We've already covered Petra Kvitova and her dodgy ankle. Kenin.
She's in a great section, I remember thinking. She's in a really open section of the draw. But I think the same applies for all the players she's with. I think they will be looking at Kenin thinking,
yeah,
she's probably vulnerable here.
I haven't got her anywhere.
No,
but I'll let you
but
know.
But I always
Matt,
do.
But you
this.
Do have that quarter. You haven't even put light ink in
no,
that quarter.
No, because it's so open.
It's available, Sophia.
I think
for you to persuade Matt.
I think Madison Keys might be in there.
I've got Madison
she
Keys.
She really
in
ought to be
yeah.
with this draw. I've with got... her skills, she should be. But I will never get it out of my mind watching her lose to Evgenia Rodina in the fourth round a few years ago when she was. At her peak.
She's got to the quarters of every slam, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not every time.
No, but, yeah. You know, she's in her own way being consistent.
Mm. Oh, yeah, she's been consistent in slams, but not recently.
I still feel underwhelmed by her achievements relative to her talent and gifts.
It's a real sign of the times for her that you're not looking at her name in that section and going Keys quarters.
Well, she's in my
David
quarters.
Should be.
I've got her in there.
Right.
But I would say that was that's probably the last section that I completed.
It's really open. You've got Kudermetova, Mertens, who doesn't love the grass, I don't think.
Kudermetova's in my bad books after the French Open.
Sophia Kenin, Danielle Collins. It's extremely open. You've got Muguruza in the quarter below that, who is a total unknown quantity fitness-wise. If she's fit,
I've got her
then
in.
She's...
I've got about 12 players at the moment in the quarter.
And then bottom section, what do we think of Aryna Sabalenka?
I think her against Monica Niculescu is a match that I'm going to find a way to watch. Because I mean, imagine it. Forehand slices against...
She's qualified, Niculescu. So she's played herself into some form. If Sabalenka has any kind of French Open hangover, Niculescu could just drive her to distraction.
That would be hilarious.
And dismantle her.
Yeah. I think Sabalenka will win that.
Yeah. I mean, most people listening to this podcast will be doing so after that match has happened. So let's not commit ourselves too hard to a prediction there. But she's in a decent part of the draw, Sabalenka.
Thing is, I think Sabalenka can lose to anyone.
Mm.
I mean, I know Pavlyuchenkova went on to have a great run at the French Open, and she is a dangerous player for top 10 seeds. But Pavlyuchenkova is a completely different game style to Niculescu. And yet you sort of think both could be dangerous. Sort of anything can happen with Sabalenka. She's the ultimate nightmare for predictions.
There's Sakkari in there. There's Rybakina in there. I think I might end up with Rybakina.
I was drawn to Rybakina.
Had a run in
another
there.
One in my bad books.
In Eastbourne.
She was in my newsletter and I thought I was on to a win. I sat there till 9 p.m. watching her find a way past Sevastova, and then the next day
she lost to Ostapenko.
Yes. At least she lost to the eventual champion.
Yes,
I'll take some solace in that.
Well done, Elena Ostapenko, who nobody's got in any quarterfinals. Well done for winning Eastbourne though. So that's your draw dissection.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
It's time for Dialer Dan.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So, David, you asked him today.
Let's just ask him, shall we? Dan, do you look at your draw? Did you look at it? Do you look beyond the first round?
Didn't look at the draw. If I'm being totally honest, I was disappointed with my draw. I just thought playing Lopez is tough, but if I get through that, I'll be in good shape for whoever I play, really. Because that's a proper win if I win tomorrow on the grass.
I just want to follow up with, what wouldn't be a proper win?
Well, I did.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. Did
you get names?
He was quite polite, to be fair. But he said it's, and this is the other thing about comfort on grass. He really puts a lot of stock in that. There are players that are good players that don't look anywhere near as dangerous on grass because they just don't know how to do it. They don't know what it gives you as a sort of game style of options and what it costs you if you don't have those abilities. And I think he's going to beat Feliciano Lopez. I think he feels
he's 39.
You know, I mean, look, Lopez is still a really—he's incredibly fit and strong still, and he will maraud forwards at all costs, and that's the danger.
And I know he played in Mallorca last week, and I have to say I didn't see any of that. But who did he lose to at Queens? I thought he looked a bit injured.
He wasn't fully fit against Denis Shapovalov.
Yeah, he looked to be suffering with his back a little bit to me.
Evans has had an issue with lefties, but they've been very different sorts
different
of players. I'm trying to work out whether it was the playing style or the leftiness. Perhaps Lopez, the result against him, will give us some insight into that.
The other thing is the pressure on Evans in his own mind. He's so desperate to deliver.
He builds up these slams so much.
If he wins one match, though, I think he kind of knows this as well. It's not about the specifics of the draw. I think like he says there, if he's playing well and he beats this guy, then he's really playing well. But it's more to me. It's more about he's in the draw. Then he's in the tournament,
which he hasn't been for what is it? Three straight first round losses at Slam.
I think for the future of Dialer Dan, it would be great if he could. I really like Feliciano Lopez, but I feel like I've got a lot invested in Dialer Dan.
Yeah.
And I mean, we will continue beyond his exit from the tournament, I trust.
But, I mean, hour ago, we didn't even have a name for it.
But now that we do, I'd
start to the feature, and then we called it something.
We're going to need another player beginning with D and their phone number if he goes out.
What other Dans
and
them
not
there?
To block us?
No, not D. Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could have Dialer Dave.
I don't know any
Dialer Daniil.
Hello.
That would work, wouldn't it?
Dialer Dimitrov.
Just need their numbers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Small issue.
We're not ditching you, Dan.
What do we think about Andy Murray tomorrow?
Yeah, I was just going to come on to that because I realised I'd completely missed him out earlier.
Third on centre court.
I think he will beat Nicolas Basilashvili tomorrow. I think it's not the best draw.
Catherine's just watching Belgium score in the Euros.
Did you see it?
No, but I
desperately want to now.
There are some men dressed as Smurfs that have... Are Smurfs Belgian?
It's the bad Hazard who scored.
Is it a Smurfs Belgian?
Who's the bad Hazard?
It's not Edin.
Not Edin.
Who's the...
His brother.
There's one... Are they brothers?
Yeah.
He just scored in the Euros.
He's got an unbelievable goal.
He's been called bad.
Relatively.
Like Hamburg.
Crikey.
Just have a watch of this. Quickly watch the replay and then we can resume the podcast. Here we go. There we go. Look at that.
That is not bad. I've got Andy Murray in the quarters.
I haven't gone through the draw yet. That is the quarter that Matt has affectionately and tentatively called the Denis Shapovalov quarter.
Have you got him in the end, Matt? Because you had to have a bit of a lie down after putting him in your provisional list.
I started my predictions yesterday and had Denis Shapovalov in the quarters and thought, right, Matt, don't be ridiculous. Take a moment, sleep on it. I have done, and I've still got Denis Shapovalov in the quarters.
Wow, this could be a moment.
Who's Andy Murray losing to?
I think Denis Shapovalov.
Oh, right,
they're in that section.
No. Listen, if Andy Murray ends up playing Denis Shapovalov, he will not be losing to Denis Shapovalov.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I think that's sufficiently into the tournament that Murray could be struggling physically at that point. And Shapovalov, that's exactly the sort of match he would be up for, I think.
I don't think he would be a bit crippled by respect and admiration. He has had a fair dose of that in the past.
Maybe, but with Murray?
I mean, he's not specifically mentioned having posters of Andy Murray on his wall, no, but... Most tennis players with a sort of respect for the game hold Andy Murray in some kind of reverence.
For sure, yeah. And so they should.
Yeah.
Sort of perhaps not as rivals.
You know, the way Yannick Sinner was talking about Andy Murray was...
Look, I think, for me, what I'm struck by with Andy Murray is how relieved he is to just be playing Wimbledon. It's not only last year he missed. He missed 2019 Wimbledon and 2018 Wimbledon. And I think he has spoken about finding it hard to know how much effort to put in to the tournament prior to the one he actually wants to play in case he gets injured. Yeah. He said he didn't know how much he could push himself at Queens, and he loves Queens. It's one of his favourite tournaments because he desperately wanted to play Wimbledon, and now he's here and is going to play. I'm just so pleased for him that he gets that.
Yeah.
And I think he can win a couple of matches. I thought he was playing at times quite well at Queens.
You've totally airbrushed out the Murray-Pierre-Rugger-Bear partnership there. And the Marina.
Yeah, sure.
That's not what we called it, is it? Sir Andy.
That was
he was
great.
There. He was.
Yeah, no, he was. But you know what I mean.
I do. So you got him in the quarters. I've got him winning tomorrow and then TBC. And Matt, you've got him...
I think third or fourth round, whenever he would play.
But we all think he's beating Basilashvili.
Yeah, I didn't intend to have him in the quarters until things just started to progress. And I got a bit carried away.
He had some very strong things to say, didn't he, about Basilashvili and the fact that the ATP... or his belief that the ATP should have a domestic violence policy.
Yes.
And that the situation with Basilashvili and with Zverev as well, obviously different situations. Basilashvili is awaiting trial for domestic abuse charges, has highlighted the absence of any kind of policy, and Murray was pretty unequivocal about that being
as he was last time when he was asked about it in relation to Zverev, and all power to Andy Murray for sticking his head out and being prepared to say what he thinks on that subject and standing firm in that belief that not enough is done in order to have a clear policy and a sequence of processes that would follow an allegation of this type.
Yeah, it would certainly be uncomfortable for me to watch Andy Murray lose his probable last ever Wimbledon match to Nicolas Basilashvili. But we'll see. The heavens have opened in, well, I'm SW15.
Oh, great.
Just a mile down the road.
I've got to walk home in this.
So I think the prediction is that Roofs will be on tomorrow. Roofs, plural.
Yeah.
The number one court roof will be out in force. I think that's it in terms of draw news. We heard from Serena Williams in her pre-tournament press conference that she doesn't plan to play the Olympics. There's a spate of those withdrawals happening, aren't there? Denis Shapovalov said he's not going to play the Olympics. Dominic Thiem not planning to play the Olympics. He also isn't playing Wimbledon. He suffered a wrist injury in Mallorca last week. It looks quite bad, actually. That wrist injury is going to keep him out for a while, most likely. I can understand it. And it does tend to be a bit of a trend that if you've got an Olympic gold medal, it's kind of a box ticked. It is slightly different to the Grand Slams in that way.
It's very different depending on the player, isn't it? Because I think there are some players that seem to prioritise the Olympics ahead of everything else. But more often than not, it's the other way around. And I think, look, this is a very specific Olympics. It's during a pandemic in Tokyo where there is anxiety generally. And I also think there is just such a bubble fatigue about these players now. And it's just another one that they would have to shoehorn in.
Andy Murray will play the Olympics. He was announced in the GB squad alongside Dan Evans in singles. Cam Norrie apparently had counted himself out, said he didn't want to play at the Olympics. Andy Murray will also play doubles alongside Joe Salisbury. And Dan Evans will play with Neil Skubsky. Which I get the impression is as much of a surprise to Dan Evans as it is to everybody else that he's going to be playing Olympic doubles. But That sounds great fun.
They did have a lot of success, didn't they, earlier this year?
They qualified as a team.
Yeah, I love Olympic doubles pairings. I saw that Azarenka and Sabalenka won the doubles title in Berlin a couple of weeks ago, and they tweeted, great preparation for the Olympics. That's a doubles team that I'm excited about. So, yeah, I'm sure there'll be developments. Oh, my goodness me, I almost didn't mention Venus and Nick Kyrgios.
Which is a doubles, a mixed doubles team.
Which might be the best thing about this whole tournament.
I intended to lead with it, and here we are, 50 minutes later, and I'm only just mentioning it.
Dialer Dan got
Venus
in the way.
Venus Williams and Nick Kyrgios are playing mixed doubles together.
I gasped when I found out about that. I think it's an amazing pairing. It's sort of been in the works for a few years. We've discovered that Venus Williams was asked, I think, at the WTA Finals sort of launch event a few years ago, who her dream mixed doubles partner would be, and she said playing with Nick Kyrgios would be fun, I think, and he replied to that saying, yes, legend. And here we are, 4 years later, and it's happening. And look, I will be dropping everything to watch them in first round mixed doubles action. I think that is the power of that pairing.
Yeah, I'll be dropping everything for that as well. Just speaking of dropping everything, I have had an email land in my inbox just this moment from Wimbledon, from the AELTC, which is saying that the referee's office has advised that Johanna Konta has been withdrawn from the ladies' singles draw, having been classified as a close contact of a positive test for COVID-19. In line with government legislation, Konta is required to spend 10 days in self-isolation. Yefan Wang will replace her in the draw. Obviously, that's literally just landed. We're all processing that live, but it feels like a big story. That, I mean, obviously devastating for Konta, really feel for her. But on the brink of a championships that is going to welcome full crowds over the weekend, is sort of being seen as a big step forward towards normality from a COVID perspective. That feels like a big story and a blow and a crash down to earth.
Well, it does. I mean, it brings into focus the rest of the tournament inevitably, because they've been building this, what they hope is foolproof bubble. I mean, there's no such thing really, is there, generally, but they've done the best job they possibly can. No expense spared, no planning spared. And here we have the British number one in the women's game out for a close contact test. And the statement from the All England Tennis Club says that both Johanna and her team member had tested negative on all their previous tests undertaken. But it just goes to show that's all it takes. And she is now in 10 days of self-isolation and out of Wimbledon. And I think Freddie Nielsen a couple of days ago in the doubles was also withdrawn. Well, one hopes that person is going to be okay, but also just more generally that there aren't other test positives on the horizon, because it can cause mayhem.
I'm seeing that it was a member of Konta's team that presented with COVID-19 symptoms this morning and immediately isolated and undertook a PCR test.
It's a reminder of how precarious it all still is.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry to finish on a bum note, but it would have been remiss of us not to bring you that news. A blow for Jo Konta. Really feel for her, because she said, hasn't she, that she doesn't intend to play tennis.
I was just thinking that. How many
that
more Wimbledons has she got? Yeah,
absolutely. Oh dear. Fingers crossed that is where the situation ends with regards to positive tests and close contacts. So that's it, your Wimbledon preview for the 2021 championships. We'll be doing daily newsletters. Matt will be doing daily newsletters. I'll be watching him do daily newsletters and making bad predictions in the process thereof. So do subscribe to the newsletter if you haven't already. There will be predictions. There'll be Matt's stat. There will be dog spam, both of Billie Jean and also Mocha, our lovely mascot for Wimbledon, who is owned by lovely Dawn, who has had a mascot before, Star. Star's no longer with us, but we love Dawn and we love Dawn's dogs. And Mocha is a Chihuahua cross. And I am currently looking at a picture of him on a tennis podcast towel, wearing with a Wimbledon towel. No, it's a tennis podcast T-shirt and a Wimbledon towel draped behind. So Mocha is just all of the branded. We love Mocha. So thank you very much to Mocha. Thank you to Dawn for bringing Mocha into our lives. Thank you to Zeus, Scousel, Mousel and Rogue. This is the lovely clean slate moment on the eve of a Grand Slam when none of us have let down our mascots.
It'll come.
And long may that continue. Chris Albert Lee is our executive producer. And for the first time this Wimbledon, Matt, we have shout-outs.
We do. For Chris Camara.
Hi, Chris.
Like Chris Camara?
Quite a lot like Chris Camara, but is it not Chris Camara?
Oh, this one's better, but I mean, imagine.
Hello, Chris. Thanks for your support.
We have Puello Deir.
Ooh.
Oh, where's Puello from?
Matt said it confidently in a very Hispanic accent.
I have done.
Puello, get in touch. Let us know where you're from. You sound amazing.
Well, I think we need to add that for next year, aren't we?
Yes, we've suddenly realised.
What's your name and where do you come from?
Correct.
Currently, it's an admin nightmare to do that.
But we're going to slicken up the system next year.
Yeah. Puello, thanks a lot.
And last one today is friend of the pod, Rosemary.
Oh.
Right, Rosemary.
Rosemary, not the dog?
Rosie, not the dog.
Hello.
Yes. In Guernsey.
Yes, hello.
Who came to our first ever live show. Yeah. Who is just the nicest.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much, Rosemary, for your support. We hope you enjoy our daily Wimbledon podcasts. I certainly intend to enjoy doing them and being in your company for this fortnight. And let's do this. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.